Mamma mia, okay.
One thing I respect the most about Ioana Petrescu is she's often a one-woman show. Not only is she known for her skills behind the camera as a director and cinematographer, but also for her in-front-of-camera presence as an actress and teacher. After building a successful career as a cinematographer, Ioana created Visual Metaphor Academy, a program that takes individual skills from beginner to filmmaker in just 4 months.
And that's why I created Visual Metaphor Academy, the program that teaches you filmmaking and how to get your first clients in 4 months, starting from complete beginner.
I only came across Ioana's journey and work a few months ago after she posted a video featuring YouTuber Nathaniel Drew. Thanks to the YouTube algorithms, her video showed up on my feed as I've been a follower of Nathaniel's journey for quite a few years now. After first clicking on her video, it really did not take me long to realize that this video was not a regular YouTube video. This was a combination of so much talent, thought, creativity, and skill. Instead of struggling to describe Ioana's work, I recommend taking a moment to check it out, and if you're anything like me, you'll be grateful to have found so much art and depth and intentionality through the video format. So, after binging all of her previous content, I knew I wanted to chat further with Ioana in regards to why and how she is creating such thoughtful videos. Recently, I've been dabbling with different mediums myself and playing around with video. If I'm honest, I often find myself feeling quite torn in regards to if and why I should document and share part of my life online. But then, there's moments like this where Ioana shares her thoughts behind the process that really solidify the path for me.
It starts with an intention. For example, and my intention for this YouTube is documenting the journey, because when I'm going to, for example, let's say in 10, 20 years, I'm going to create really big films. Let's say I'm going to create the next Matrix, for example. And it would be so cool to do that and then have all of the process of how I became the person that was able to create that, because that is like worldwide mind-blowing to create something that amazing. And I think I can do it. So if I'm going to document this process, how empowering is that? How much you're adding to the world if you document your process? Like I think that's really cool. And I really appreciate when people document their lives when they're trying to achieve, when they document their hero journey, because everybody's on their hero. You're on a hero journey. So that's my intention with this YouTube channel. So every time I'm document, I'm like, okay, what story am I telling here? What am I documenting now?
Now, I'm obviously not going to be making the next Matrix, but I feel as though there's a lot of us that have our own Matrix and our own unique path that we are on. It's easy to look at the highlights and successes of Ioana's journey and see how it all makes sense within her own path. But one thing I love about this podcast and long form content in general is that we get to go a layer deeper and unpack the journey of how people got to where they are today. The more stories I hear, the more confident I am to say that no one's journey is linear. For every win an individual has, there is at least an equivalent of a loss. So, Ioana wants to create the next Matrix. And I can wholeheartedly say that I know she will. But let's take it back a few steps on her journey and unpack what Ioana's life looked like only a few years ago.
I was on Instagram looking at stories and I stumbled on this story and it said, looking for professional cinematographer to move to Kiev and work with us, travel around the world and produce and film video content. It was this business company. And I really like that really resonated. I would have to travel. I would get to film these people. I would also be paid money because I was 23. Just finished 3 years of nunning around. So I had no connection with that. I was like, hell yeah, like, let's do it. So the problem was the first thing I had to do was Google, what is a cinematographer? Cinematographer meaning, like, I had no idea what that was. But I had the confidence. So I was like, I'm applying. I obviously didn't have two years of experience, but I applied. I obviously didn't get the job because I had no camera skills at that point. But I had a lot of good editing skills because, as you know, doing animation in college, that really, in university, I learned that. So that year, I decided, okay, didn't get a job, but what I'm going to do? I'm going to become a cinematographer now. Like, this is what I have to do. So that's when it clicked, like it made sense, and it really grew from there. And all of the things that I did before made a lot of sense, and I put into my work as a cinematographer.
From Googling, what is a cinematographer, to creating a film school, all in less than a decade, well, that's a story to unpack. On February 3rd of 2023, I sat down with Ioana via video call from her home in Romania. I started out the conversation by asking her my opening question. In order for me to understand the world from your perspective, what do I need to know? What themes, what life experiences have you had, or what maybe like strong beliefs do you have that whatever's coming top of mind at the moment that you think are important for me to understand?
Good question. Okay, we have to, I think, for we are the sum of the people that we've met, and we are the sum of the people that we have interacted with. And obviously, we gotta go back to the childhood. And mm-hmm. A lot of those young years have shaped me. And it all starts with my parents. My mom, she's an artist. She's a painter. She's like top 10 icon painters in the world. So I grew up in a household surrounded by art. I grew up in a household where I never had a TV, for example. Like that was something my peers always, you know, they were watching the latest Scooby-Doo episode. I could never really have access to that. So I would read books. We would go to museums. I mean, me and my brother, we would really be annoyed by that. But I think that really shaped me. And that was something that became really normal for me from a really young age. So just art and analyzing art and culture, that was something very, very normal. And also this juxtaposition between this kind of like culture and art, and that's something, these are more educated values, you can say, that mm-hmm. with the kind of opposite, which would be nature, living in the countryside with my grandma and grandpa, you know, because in Romania, a lot of the people that live in the city, they have grandparents in the countryside. So being really close to nature, like milking a cow, playing with the chickens, killing the chickens because I was so young and I didn't know what I was doing, you know. So like exposure, I think this shaped me, and it will always shine in my videos. And I think there are some deep values. There are some, you know, like appreciation for nature, mm-hmm. appreciation mm-hmm. for the arts, appreciation of beauty as a virtue, all of these things. So that is one.
Usually when I ask my guests this question, they often start in a similar place, which is their childhood. Now, although Ioana shared this similarity, there was another piece of her journey that really piqued my curiosity.
And then somehow the second would be, this is something that not a lot of people know about me, and I haven't talked a lot about this a lot. It's my nun phase. That was a really intense phase in my life. And I sometimes refer to it the time my life has peaked. I mean, it really depends how you look at it. I don't think it has peaked, but I have lived some really intense moments when I was around 20. And that was like it started with me discovering this nun path and me mm-hmm. really wanting to commit to it when I was 21. And it ended up not happening.
Okay, so I don't know anything about this kind of path. So what, you said you were 21 and you were like, you know what, I think I want to be a nun. Like what kind of drove you to, no?
No, so everything is very connected. Like if you're going to start asking me, Ioana, so how did you end up being a filmmaker? It is very connected with my nun path and with everything, with the intensity of curiosity that I've always had. I was just like trying to figure it out, like almost if life, I wanted to understand it. So that was just one of the places that life got me to. I ended up at around 19 in some Romanian mountains, and I met this priest who was kind of like a ninja kind of monk, interesting guy. And I had a conversation with him. I was obviously really young and naive. So mm-hmm. that like maybe if I would have the same conversation right now, it would be a very different conversation. But that left a really impact on me, and that's kind of started my nun journey. So then okay. he became my spiritual father, and for 4 years that was a crescendo to me becoming a nun. And in those years, there were the famous 3 months in the woods where I lived in the woods in a tent, and crazy experiences like that.
Can I ask what made you leave, or like what kind of that catalyst was maybe that you left?
I can just say there were some things off about this religious group, even though it was Orthodox. It wasn't like a cult in itself. It wasn't a separate religious group like all the cults we know. It was getting culty. It was getting culty. Mm-hmm. And my parents have noticed that. And I was way too young to understand what that is. I was just, yes, I want to be with God forever. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my mm-hmm. thinking at that age. So they didn't let me. They did not let me go. And I did not have the guts to go and just go in, because it wasn't even in Romania. Like, I would have to move country to go and live there. So I just didn't go. I postponed it. And yeah, that was it.
Although Ioana left the nun phase behind, there were aspects of that season of her life that she still takes with her to this day.
All of the things that I'm doing now come from that, from those feelings and from all of those values that were planted in me. Because there are things that I don't want to take with me forward, mm-hmm. but there were things like the desire to want to help other people, the desire, like this value that I am here because I want to add to this world. I want to create something for the people. Obviously, I want to enjoy my time, but also like selflessness to a point, you know, like giving.
Today, this desire to help others has really taken form in other ways, such as through her work as a filmmaker. But her path to here was not linear. Okay, so now I want to move on to film. And you've mentioned how like being a filmmaker has tied into everything. When did this all start? You said you never had a TV. So like what exposure were you getting to like film? I guess if you're going to museums, you can see maybe photography and things like that. How did that all start?
I love that you mentioned that, because I think that is why it took me such a long time for me to even think of this form of expression, because it took me a really long time to find this form of expression that finally made sense to me. Because ever since I know myself, I tried many, many things, like many arts. I did music for 10 years, professional gymnastics to a point, of like so many sports, theater, so you know, so many graphic design. That was my bachelor degree, fashion design. Like I would, when I was in high school, I would make money from selling clothes. So from the clothes that I made. So I would always switch and find a new thing, and I would just try to find it, you know, like what would be the thing that is gonna finally fulfill my artistic and I don't even know. I thought of that way, that my artistic, but finally it would fulfill me, and I could also make a living out of. And that was a really long journey, and it pissed and annoyed so many people, especially my parents, because they were confused. They were like, "Oh my God, what is she gonna do now? Okay, she's starting graphic. Okay, she's doing clothes now. Okay, she wants to." I don't even like. There were too many things. So when So finally, at one point, I discovered, like, after I finished my bachelor degree in graphic design and animation, and that was somehow, I took a break. I had, like, a sabbatical. And after that, I discovered cinematography. And it made sense. After, like, it really made sense when I started doing that.
During this point in the conversation, I found myself laughing at multiple points because I just related in such a deep way in regards to figuring out my own journey and finding my own form of expression. I was laughing earlier when you were mentioning about like trying to find your thing and like your expression, because I'm like, oh my God, I relate to your journey so much in that way. We've had completely different lives, but I think there is just like this curiosity and just like this passion for something as cheesy as it sounds, like greater than us, right? It's like, what, how are we expressing ourselves in the world and like forming our opinion and sharing our perspective with the world. Like, what does that look like? How are we doing it, right? And I'm the same. Like, I always had to find, like, a thing in a way. And it was frustrating at times of, like, what's my thing? And I think I'm still uncovering what it is, but there definitely is something in, like, this podcasting thing. And so that's why I'm, like, pushing you with all these questions, because it's cool to hear.
That's fascinating. And it never ceases to amaze me how many people, how not unique we are. I mean, mm-hmm. How I've heard this so many times, especially in my students, because right now I teach a film course, mm-hmm. where everybody that comes is like, oh my God, that's exactly my story. Like, I've tried so many things and I'm looking to find it.
Ioana found fulfillment in cinematography, and by watching just one of her videos, I think it's evident that Ioana has discovered, quote-unquote, it. So, what makes her videos so great? Is it color grading? Is it pacing? Or is it storytelling? What do you think goes into a good story?
What you need to have a good story is emotion. When, recently, after I started my YouTube channel, and it grew quite a bit in the past months, I got this question more often. And the advice for the people that want to tell a story, or they want to record and document their life, because this is like, I'm not telling any story. I'm telling a story about my life, and that's an important difference. I always hunt for emotion. Like, I always turn my camera in an emotional moment. It can be a low moment. It can be but anything with intensity, because that is art. It is life without all of the dull moments. Anything that is dull, you want to remove it, and you just get all of the drama. And storytelling is seeing somebody wanting something and not being able to get it. Something stops them. It's all about the hero journey. That is the story. It's like, I want to go to Paris, but oh, I don't think I'm in the mood, but I have arrived and I'm meeting Dayden, but his apartment is not ready, but I'm, you know, like, it's all of this push and pull. So that, to simplify, I think that's what makes a great story.
Were you always, like, when you were growing up, were you always kind of, like, telling stories and trying to reiterate or kind of express what was in your mind and sharing it with the world? Or was that kind of something you began to pick up as you leaned more into cinematography? Or was it always kind of been a theme in your life?
That's really interesting, because... Yes, so in my family, my mom, she's a really good storyteller. She's one of those people that when she tells a story, even though you've heard it before, you just want to hear it one more time because of the drama of it, because of how she tells it. So I think I have a little bit of that in me. Mm-hmm. But I never really identified myself with being a good storyteller. I really identified myself for the past, like, since 2018, when I started video and film, with making great visuals. That was my thing. I was like, I'm good at making good visuals. And I was also accused by some people that, oh, now, but you need to, you don't understand, Ioana. The key to filmmaking is telling a great story. If I'm going to hear that the key to filmmaking it's all about the story, I'm just going to shoot myself. I cannot hear this phrase anymore. And I never really, it's weird. Like, I never pursued. I never wrote on my whiteboard here, the key to filmmaking is telling a good story. And I think that's, you can understand why my storytelling is the way it is, because of what drives it. Because my point of storytelling is never, I want to tell a good story. Mm-hmm. And because I'm never trying to impress people with a good story, I have something else. The story ends up being good anyways, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I even had something about that here. Contemporary beauty often has no substance, no useful message or depth. Your art creates from answering or exploring the big questions of our existence. This led us to another topic I was really compelled to chat with Ioana about, and that is the topic of beauty. As you will hear later on, if I had to summarize my relationship with beauty, I would say it's been rocky. But over the past few months, I've began to see more and more value with its role within my life. In the past, I never saw much value in beauty as I often dismissed it as a superficial element to the world, and I spent a lot more of my energy on other aspects. But what's been unique about Ioana's work is that she pushes to add meaning to this aspect of her life. So I found on your website, you have written, it says your mission as a filmmaker is adding depth to beauty. And so my question from that is like, what role do you think beauty has within your life?
These are some really good questions, Emma Kred. I feel very seen by you. You are an awesome person, by the way. Like,
Okay, I
was researching, you know, like after you contacted me, I was researching, I listened to your stuff. Like you, I like you.
I like you too. That's why I had you on the podcast. And like, that's why I'm not blowing sunshine. Like I was really fucking excited about this one. So yeah.
Okay. So beauty, it has a fundamental role in my life. And the Greeks were not messing around. Like I think they are right. When beauty is a virtue and it is as important as honor, as dignity, as truth. Like we have removed that somehow. You can look at architecture, for example, communism. It didn't have beauty as a main value. And beauty can be the beauty of words, the beauty of buildings, the beauty of a speech, the beauty of, and that is, we need beauty. We need beauty on the outside because that can enrich us on the inside. Like everything is very connected, and our obsession, like because we are so beauty starved on the inside, this is my theory, because we are so beauty starved on the inside, we do not feed our minds with beautiful, we have the screen, the phones and the social media, that's we do not consume as much culture anymore, and we do not really work on this inner world. We want to compensate. There's this need to like the makeup, the Botox, the everything, like the making the outer world really, really beautiful. But I think it's, the secret is in connecting the two. It's always in connecting the two. So beauty, it is really important. I think beauty can change the world. Not to be dramatic here, but I think it can change the world because it really makes you pay attention. Like if, I mean, most of the commercials we've ever seen are very beautiful. Like, beautiful girls sell most of the products we ever buy. So, but usually beauty is very empty. Like, the way the world works right now, beauty is just beauty in itself. We work really hard to create a beautiful image, fashion. Just, like, let's make it really fucking beautiful. Like, almost like, The way I look at beauty is, I think beauty spiritually hurts in a way. Like if you see something too beautiful, you have to a little bit, like it hurts your soul a little bit. Like you have to take a moment after that, almost after like an injury. But if that beauty is helping you digest a deeper message, because sometimes culture and art and the things that would be good for your soul often do not come in easily digestible ways sometimes. Maybe it's harder to understand or harder to get really close to. But if it would be packaged beautifully and attractive, like if we would take all of this beauty and add to it, I think we have a really powerful combination.
You've got my head spinning. Because, okay, so I like, when I was 19, I like kind of like realized a lot of things. It's kind of when I say I almost like woke up in a way, and I just started, I always kind of had this like relationship with myself, but something unlocked when I was like 19. Okay. And I really went really minimalistic. And if people know my journey, like minimalism has been a huge part of my life. And so I used to be really into style and expressing myself externally, and like would wear these crazy outfits all the time. And then when I became a minimalist, I literally sold all my shit and I had just a carry-on bag. So that meant I would just wear all black, like, you know, like gym outfits, because I also had to be able to wear it to the gym and whatever. And so since then, I have been, right now, I'm 25 now, and I am having an identity crisis, because for so long, especially when I went a lot more into my journey with minimalism, one of the values that I completely stripped away from my life was beauty. And I was traveling around a lot. And so that meant like when I'd move into a space, I couldn't justify, first off, paying. I was in such like a masculine, like, you know, masculine, feminine energy. I was in such like a logical perspective. I was also like broke as shit. So it was like, I can't afford like a painting. I'm gonna get a couch, you know, and whatever. And so as I'm getting older, and just kind of like going along in my personal journey, I'm realizing like there is so much value in beauty, and I can't explain why it is, or like this logical side of me is still making me justify it. Like, why do you want to buy those paints? Like they're £5. Like you could spend that money on, like, you could invest that, or you could buy something more valuable. Right. And so it's almost this like unlearning of showing myself the value of beauty. And I think I can't put it into words. And so that's why I have this like fascination with people that value beauty so much. And like, I see it and I'm like, wow, this is so fucking cool. Like, I love what you've created, but for some reason I have this hesitation with myself. And so I'm honestly in a huge identity crisis right now in regards to like my style and my like external expression.
That is fascinating. And it's super relatable too. Because in my nun years, do you think I was wearing all of these glamorous outfits? No, in my nun years, I was literally a minimalist. I lived in the forest. What are we talking about? Like, that is the definition of a minimalist.
Yeah, I know. I saw like because you posted something about it on your blog. That's how I found this whole, like, you're like, I had peaked. I've done my research.
Wow.
I've done my research.
Oh my God.
Okay, so I'm curious, like, how, so you've been through this journey and you're someone who I'm like, wow, like, I really respect that about you, of like this beauty. You seem to have a very, you seem to be very comfortable with who you are and how you express yourself externally, your style. How the hell did you figure that out? Like, coming from the nun phase, the nun years, like, what did that look like?
Very good question again. And I think this comes down to managing my journey with managing polar opposites, which, and I think greatness is when you manage to integrate in yourself two polar opposites. Is not going towards an extreme or the other, is integrating both and being able to bring both when the situation requires to. Because having skills to live with very little and enjoy life with very little, that is essential to life, to actually enjoying life, to the richness of life. But also being able to enjoy the beauty and to express yourself and luxury. That's also kind of like the polar opposite. And I've played with these extremes. And obviously when I was younger, I would go from one extreme to the other. Like in my high school, I had my, what is that? Like I was kind of like one of the mean girls in the movies, like very high heels, really ridiculous outfits with
this was me as well, like, yeah. I literally would wear heels to school every single day for the last 3 years of school. Like, my friend, I would wear these like massive fur coats, like
fur
I
coats.
Would wear
Emma,
yes,
it's all fur coats. It is
like, that was a vibe when you wore that coat. You were like on another level.
Okay, then we are connected on a fur coat high school level. Yeah. This goes deep. Yes. Yeah. So that was a journey going into in that extreme. Like I was very extreme with that, but right now I feel after going through that and then going to the other extreme where I literally shaved my head. I mean, I had very, very short hair and I would try to desexualize myself to look basically like a boy, you know, like t-shirt, yeah. Jeans, no sex appeal whatsoever, because I wanted to pursue the nun life. And that was like kind of looking like a hobo a little bit, not in a chic way. So yeah. I had the polar opposites, and I feel like now they have finally, like, the stars have aligned. Sometimes, you know, and I'm comfortable with both right now.
Yeah. Well, it's like validating because, yeah, I feel like I'm just recently am I like, you know what, there is value in this, and I'm like overriding that part of my mind now. Like, I'm unlearning. I'm like, no, I see value in this. Like, I'm going to invest in this energetically, financially, etc. Because even just the more, especially the more I talk to creatives, I just talked to an artist and she was talking about how, like, when she creates her art, she's an abstract artist and she makes paint. She's like, I wear like I want to feel like I look amazing. And she was like, I will make these crazy paintings be covered in paint, but I'm in an amazing outfit. And I'm like, there's just something to that. And she was just talking about, she's like, when I think about like my highest version of myself, I'm wearing an outfit like this. So why wouldn't I be creating this thing that I'm so passionate about in like what I feel the best in? And I'm like, you know what? So literally last night I said to my partner, I was like, I'm going on a shopping spree. It's like taking money out of my savings. I'm doing it. So this is interesting. And I thank you for bearing with me, because I think my questions weren't clear there, because I'm still kind of like processing this journey myself and what I'm trying to ask, but like I see it in other people, but I can't articulate it. And maybe that's just the power of beauty, right? It goes beyond words sometimes. So
totally, totally. Yes.
Similar to my journey with beauty, my relationship with money has been something I've been putting more energy into lately, especially since I've started earning money in a more creative way. As this space is still new to me, I often look to other creatives for insight into how they navigate their finances and their relationship with money. One time you said a quote that you had heard, and it's like, it goes, if you want to help the poor, don't be one of them. And you were talking about an example of you can go and you can pick up litter in your neighborhood, or you can make a documentary about the environment and like impact a lot more people and really start changing the narrative. So can you kind of unpack that more and explain that further in your own words? And like, where, how did you uncover that? Because I feel like that's a, if you were like me and we're very similar, like in the past, I would have thought I needed to pick up litter my whole life. And I, again, I'm learning that I'm like, no, you don't need to stay in the trenches with people. If you want to help people and have an impact on them, the more resources you have, the more access you have, the more people that you can have an impact on. But for some reason, again, it's this like, I need to override that part of my brain of like still thinking I'm in this like survival mode and I need to like stay in the trenches with people and help them. So what does your journey look like around that topic?
Okay. Really good research again. To clarify what I said that not necessarily that you shouldn't take do the litter anymore, like pick up litter.
Right.
I meant right now, maybe the most you can do, the biggest resource you have is your physical act of picking up somebody's litter and taking it to the planet. And then as your resources grew on top of that, you can do something else. So, okay, just this
clarification. Yeah, thank you for clarifying.
This is also another polar opposite that I learned over time, because I also went between, I think, extremes, but from making zero money and being preoccupied with it, 0%. Because as a nun, literally my life would have been, because as a nun you took a poverty, how do you say it, like that, when you get married, like a declaration, like a vow, a poverty vow,
right? Vow, that's the word. Yeah.
And that's an extreme. Okay, that's an extreme to not making money. Like, that's the opposite of an entrepreneur. And right now, like, cut to, I think, 4 years later, I have my own company. I'm making more money than I ever imagined, in the like six figures. So it's really, you know, like I never different. Thought that is. And I'm scaling and I want to make more and more and more, because I think if you want to help the poor, don't be one of them. And that was a shift around money that happened to me. And I think people can only make this shift when they don't have examples of that it is possible. What made the shift for me is when I actually got that job in Kiev, because a year later I applied again and I got the job. And I was working with these people. It was a very, very small company. And I was doing a lot of videos for them. But I was also looking curiously on what is happening on the business front, because I was like, what is this money thing all about? So they were making $500,000, it was a very small company, per month.
Whoa.
So that was that amount of money, like, for me, it just, you know, for my family, like, my family are not like, they do okay, but they're not like super rich, super entrepreneurial oriented people. So I was looking at that and that just stretched my limits. It literally ruined my limits because I was putting limits on what I can make. And I saw if these people can make it and I think I can offer more value than them. Or like I can offer value, a different type of value than them.
Yeah. Yep.
Why couldn't I do it? Like, and it's all about like, you can make money. Money is energy. Money is, I was listening to a podcast. I will send you this about money.
Please.
Sorella Moore. If you know her.
I love her. Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah. She's amazing. And she was talking a lot about how money is just energy and how she made, cause she's really, she grew a lot in this aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fascinating. Money is energy. You can make money. You can make it starts in the mindset. If you don't think you can make a certain amount of money, you will never be able to make a certain amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's like giving yourself permission to allow yourself to feel that you can make that much money and like sitting in why you think you can't and like really sitting in that and unpacking it.
I think that's helpful. But I think it really helps if you have physical example, to me at least, it really helped to see these guys, to work 1 year next to them and see how they made those money and how possible it is. It wasn't just, you know, an example.
I think at 1,000,000%, because my like journey with money has been a whole thing, and I've only been working like properly like freelance for like just under a year now, and it's the same. And I right now, everyone I work with is based in different countries, and even just through conversations and new opportunities I'm having within my career, like there's going to be more in-person things and being in being in a studio where it is a business and they are making money. And I agree, like even just being around that and seeing like, okay, you're charging this much just to rent out the space, whatever, and like just sussing out like what is possible, it is kind of like changing. I feel myself stepping into like another layer, and it's really cool because it's also in a creative space. And I find it is almost even harder if you've just worked a corporate job and say you were an HR person. Okay, you just go on Google and you figure out what's the average like HR salary for my area, right? If you had like if you're like a nerd, like if you had a specific job title that you could put into one word, right? You can just Google what's the average salary and you could probably figure it out. But in these creative spaces, I find it's really hard to kind of like find your value. Is that making sense? Have you navigated that?
100%. No, it makes, you summed it up. Yeah, that's it. In the creative spaces, it's also, that's the challenge, because there's no Googling. Mm-hmm. There's no Googling the average of. In the creative spaces, the game is all about perceived value and value, like understanding the relationship between money and value. And it's all about the perceived value, because when you buy a piece of art, it can be like it's a painting that people spend the exact time painting that painting, and one is 10,000 and one is 10 million. So,
right. It's an interesting one. It's like a journey I'm on. And so it is inspiring, like you said, to see people doing it. And I think I agree with what you're saying, because the more people I meet like in real life and like have personal relationships with, it does really help change my perspective. But then it is really cool that we live in a world where there is people like Sorelle, who like even her financial channel is just mind blowing. Her talking about even like some of just her Instagram stories, I'm like, this is so informative.
Yes.
Around money, around your relationship with money, especially like these really creative people. I'm so grateful that they've started talking more about like the financial side and like the logical kind of business side. Cause especially when you're starting out, I find it so hard to find your feet in.
I think this should be financial talk, and people they shouldn't necessarily print out like, this is how much money I make. Super like bank.
Oh, they don't need to. Money. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. No, no, I agree.
mention what is possible. I think that is very empowering. Oh, like this person that I know, this is how much money they're making. Okay, how? Like, teach me. I think I really believe in that. I want to share. Like, I definitely, as I'm going to grow, I really want to share more about that, because I want to, I have been helped by people like Sorelle and like people that shared, talked about their finances with me, and I want to put it forward.
I would honestly love to hear your perspective on that. Like, just because you create such, like, there's just like this connection between creativity and finances, and I'm like, cool. Like, when creative people talk about it, it hits in a different way. So I'm like, please, please do. As I moved into a freelance position, I often joke with my friends that I feel like a child who is left unsupervised. Although my current working situation has really been a goal of mine for years, I still have moments where I almost get overwhelmed with the flexibility and numerous options on how I'm able to set up my day and work schedule. Over the years, I've spent a fair share of time trying to find the quote-unquote right way to do things. Whether this is waking up with the sunrise, time blocking, or trying all different sorts of routines. Hearing about people's workflows or how they navigate time management is something I find fascinating, and honestly a large part of why I created this podcast. And I keep saying your videos, but it's like, that's where I'm gaining a lot of this information from. But in your videos, you've talked about a couple times how you focus kind of on one thing at a time. What does that look like? Is it like, how literal is it that you're focusing on one thing at a time? And like, did you read that somewhere? Have you learned the hard way of like trying to do 100 things at once and you've realized the value in just like looking or focusing on one thing at a time?
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to is when I mentioned that diluted focus gets diluted results.
Mm-hmm. And I think that I probably wrote this down from when you went on the Matthew retreat and you were figuring out what the next thing you were going to focus on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, I do stand by that. I do agree with that. And even this year, I'm cutting even more things out just to be razor sharp focus on one thing.
Mm-hmm. So do you view it as like, I'm guessing is like, so your one focus probably what it was, because I watched the video, is like you were finishing your academy. Like yes. That was kind of the focus. Then do you have like, if you have another project starting up of like, say you're making a film, are you like, okay, this is the next focus for 3 months? Or do you do it more like in like specific blocks, or is it like project based?
Okay. Yeah. So this one focus at a time, really comes and helps with the amount of, and I'm sure this applies to you and to many other people, how many things I want to do in this life. Like there are so many, mm-hmm. me as a filmmaker, that's just one career path that I want to have. There's just like mm-hmm. one, I want to do so many other career paths that I'm not going to be able to do them all, but just a few, like one more at least. And yeah. So I know that in this phase of my life, as you know, as a young woman, I'm going to be pursuing that, and that then gets that's on a bigger perspective. When we zoom in, we have smaller goals, but I feel in order for me to really enjoy my life, I need to see results. Because if I, and this is something really interesting, is there again two polar opposites: enjoying your life, really enjoying every day, like this can be like hedonism a little bit, how pleasant your life is, how much in flow you are, versus how many results, like versus delayed gratification. These two things, again, you know, like I'm going to work now, I'm going to suffer now, because later I'm really going to get the results. So between these two things, I think there should also be a balance. And I also did like the two polar opposites. And this year, something that really kind of shaped me last year, I met with these two actors, and they're really incredible artists. And we saw how different we are, because I operate more on a delayed gratification. Like I'm like, I'm going to focus to mm-hmm. get the results. And they are on the opposite. They're like, let's just go with the flow. Life is good. Let's just stay up until 4 a.m. and like smoke. I mean, I don't smoke, but let's. This is, they're very bohemian, and they kind of make me enjoy life a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But I feel it's always about the balance between the two. So find moments where I would enjoy my life, but also plan this delayed gratification so I get the results. So at the end of the year, I'm like, look, I finished this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taking me forward. Yeah.
That's like another thing. Especially once you go and you start like on this, like once you kind of find the thing and then you're like trying to make it work,
yes,
but you also got to pay a rent and like things are all contributing, things are moving, of like finding that balance between I say it's like the masculine feminine of like pleasure, enjoyment, reception, like receiving, right, flow, because that's also too where like a lot of creativity comes, right, in those, like, you're not indulging, but like in that rest and that relaxation. But then I'm the same, it's like I, and also our society, I feel like, really pushes us into like this masculine, right? And I feel like we are I'm very goal driven, and I'm the same where I like I almost have to mourn all of these things I want to do in my life, knowing that like, okay, literally there's just not enough time in life, right? And so it's like you have to get clear on like, okay, what do I really want to do? What do I really want to put my attention in? And so in order to do that stuff though, like you have to structure it out, right? So I really struggle to find that balance, even just like in my day to day of, okay, I have to get all these things done, but then like the sun shining and talking about beauty and things like that. And you know how you were talking about like the importance of it and how it almost feels like an injury. I think that is another thing to beauty is like it can be so jarring sometimes. But the reason I think it's so important is because it puts you in the present moment, because you're just like almost in awe, right? If you're in that injury phase, if we're going to use that example, it's like, oh, it's like it's shocking. It forces you into the present moment. You're like, holy shit, that sun is stunning. So it's this balance of allowing myself to enjoy the sun, but also like getting my shit done, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It's hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The more I go in the journey though, I'm like, the more I lean into my intuition of like, the sun feels really good right now. And then I'll like go outside and stand in the sun. And then who knows, maybe I'll like get some crazy idea. Like I try to listen to it more. And so I guess it's maybe just like uncovering like, am I just being lazy and I want to like take a break and just like go eat some food, like just snack on something that I don't need? Or is it that like I'm like, no, I'm actually hungry, like I can take a break and I can, you know? Yeah. It's a journey. I think I saw this on your blog as well, or maybe in your like bio on your website.
Okay.
It just says,
like, I don't know what.
No, don't be. I know you keep like,
what information am I putting? Because I assume nobody reads my blog, so I was not prepared for this. Okay, tell me.
Don't worry. I'm like, I want this to be a positive representation of you. I'm not gonna like pull something out of my ass.
I mean, yeah. Okay, tell me.
I know. No, don't worry. I'm kidding. Or maybe I heard you say it, but essentially, it's you said, through films, you can change the world. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you?
What I meant is that in films are very relatable. Like from all of the other arts, from all of, you can sing, you can, like, let's think of the arts. There's painting, there's dancing, there's painting, there's dancing, there's music, there's sculpture. There is, I feel like film, there's literature. I feel like film kind of, definitely I feel like if not with films, you can change the world. If films wouldn't exist, you would change the world with ideas. I mean, ideas mm-hmm. change the world. Mm-hmm. But ideas put in a beautiful, in a powerful visual way, they can change the world even more. That's what I meant mm-hmm. with that. Because mm-hmm. Before there were films, because this is a kind of like a new craft in human history, it's like 200 mm-hmm. years old. Before that, the world was changed with books, and sometimes books would be forbidden because it really fucked with people's minds. And like it changed, it made people be brave, take risks, fight against the system, you know, like question things. I think films can do that as well, because it's like an idea, it's a script, but when you put it visually, it adds something, like it plays to all of your senses. It's obviously because when you read it stimulates your brain, your like cerebral capacity and your imagination. But when you add to that a visual and audio layer with someone, usually a character you relate to, I think that just becomes 10 times more powerful. I'm curious, do you have a film or something that you watched and it really impacted your life?
top of my head, I think about the movie Into the Wild. I think it's like one of the last scenes or the last scene he writes, like as he passes, he wrote "Happiness is best when shared." And it's something that I come back to. Like I have the image of him writing that in the notebook, like in my head all the time. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also one of my favorites. The Matrix, that's iconic. Mm. Like it mm-hmm. really fucks with your mind. And that's kind of like what I want to create in life. I want to do bigger things and hope at one point grow them until I get to that level. I don't know if in this exact format, but something like that, where you create something really big that changes, like, and it becomes iconic. Also, a book can be iconic, an idea can be iconic, but when you personify it, when you add a real character played by a human, it just becomes this. It influences culture in a really fascinating way. Like the way Wednesday right now, everybody's doing the little dance. It just becomes iconic in a way that a book, you cannot replicate a dance from a book. Like it's just an idea in people's imagination. And you can be like, yes, I love that book. But you imagined it differently. But Wednesday in the movie dances in the same way for everybody. And we can connect in a really different way. And that is, I think that's the key.
Do you think it's also like a book is a very individual experience, whereas like a movie you can watch with other people and your friends, right? So it's like we all have seen, you could watch, right? And we're all doing the dance together because yes. we've all seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you want to debate, you can say, but even a movie, yeah. people can look at it and
by themselves.
Yeah.
Or a book, two people could read the book at the same time. And like,
they yeah. can read the book at the same time, but even a movie, you can watch the same movie and have different experiences while you're watching the movie. But it is more of a unified feeling when two people are watching a movie versus mm-hmm. reading.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Very interesting. You had posted, when we like decided that we were going to record together, I had posted like a question box and I had a few people ask some questions. And one question that I thought would be cool to talk about is comparing your work to other people and like how you navigate that. Or do you even navigate
not
that?
Me, imposter syndrome, comparing myself to other people. What is that?
What?
Me? I am a Krebs. I'm above all of that. Something that a realization that I came to in the past years and that I see how I've integrated this lesson is the lesson of copying other people. Hmm. Of like people pointing fingers at other people. You copied him and he, like, for example, Nathaniel Drew made a video about how people were accusing him of copying Matt D'Avella and
yeah.
you know, that whole drama.
Yeah.
I never struggled with this because I've not ever been accused of copying. I feel like this copying other people is something that I do not worry about anymore, like, or I do not worry that other people would copy me. Because this is mm-hmm. also like a fear you can have. Like, I'm going to create this and it's my idea, my precious. I'm never going to give it to anybody else. And I use the fisheye lens to tell these kind of stories. And it hasn't been used in this format of a YouTube video before. It's my YouTube format. Nobody can. Like, if I created something, I feel if something is good and you created something good, it's going to be copied. And the moment you put it out in the world, you should be okay with that. And you should take it as a compliment and as a validation that you did a good work. And I feel, and I do not, after I listened to the podcast you did with Logan, and I mm-hmm. actually, I also listened to Elizabeth Gilbert, Big Magic. I had no idea of that book. And very, very,
really?
Yeah, very, very interesting twice. Anyways, so
in this, I've only posted it like 2 weeks ago. Yeah, you listened to it twice already?
No, like I also did my research. So I listened to that. And I think what she talks about that you don't have ownership over ideas. I do not, like, yes, I came up with this format and this, like, I put the fisheye, and I think using the fisheye in this context, it really it makes you, able to create stories that otherwise you wouldn't be able to. And it creates this really unique aesthetic, and people have used it before, but not in this specific way. And it's going to be used, and people should use it. I just had the idea first, and it is not mine, and it's really, really fine. And I have, like, for example, people that came to me and were like, I'm not going to use the fisheye because then people are going to accuse me that I'm copying you. And so, and I was like, no, guys, I'm going to buy you the fisheye. Like, I had my brother started his YouTube channel. I was like, Stefan, I worked so hard to create this format, like, to figure it out. Just take my format that works. It's like, you film your life on a fisheye, because what makes the fisheye so, I'm going on a tangent here, but so what makes the fisheye so good for documenting your life is that it solves two problems. The focal length of your camera. Sometimes if the focal length is like 50 millimeters, or for example, if you would want to film yourself in a tiny room and you would film yourself, to capture the whole room and to give the audience a perspective where you are is really difficult if you don't have the fisheye. Like, everything would look so boring and so dull. So the fisheye makes everything beautiful and everything very engaging. And the second problem it solves is the audio. Because when you record with the fisheye, you need to be super close to the camera. And you never need to record audio, like separate audio. So I was like, just take this format, it works, apply it. And he did. And so other people are doing it. Like, I have encouraged, I think, like, I have four people around me that just bought the fisheye and started using, and they should. So it's fine. Do I compare myself to other people? I don't necessarily compare. I always, like, when I when I create something, what is unrelatable to me is when I see people, they want to create something. For example, and when I worked with brands before, and they gave me, let's create something exactly like what I saw this other brand do. Or I want to start a YouTube channel. I saw this person in the United States doing it, or like Vogue magazine. I want exactly like that. Can we do it? But no, this is a different green. I want that green that they used in the background. And the light was a little bit like, exactly like that. This, like, copying 101, it is so, I do not get it. I don't understand. So every time when I create, I want to create something that I haven't seen before. It's boring to me to create something that I have seen before. So I don't really worry that I copy somebody else or that I compare myself to somebody else, because I'd never go there. I do compare myself to people when it comes to success, you know, like when how fast they make it, or somebody, maybe they didn't put enough effort, and I'm like, but I worked so hard for this. Why doesn't it happen for me? Like, the people are making all of this, you know, like money, whatever, like success means, and I don't have those results yet. But that's a journey, and I think I'm dealing with it pretty well. It's like everybody's on their own pace. So yeah, I think I answered your question.
You definitely did. I want to ask you a question. I was thinking about it there as you were saying it. What does your creative process look like? So say you're coming up with a new, if you need, I can put it in a category, because I know you have so many creative like ventures that you're on. But like, say you're coming up with a new video idea, like a new episode, like how does that happen? Is it like Big Magic, where you're just walking down the street one day and the idea comes in the air and it hits you on the head and you cling to it, you write it down? Do you have like specific creative days where you sit down and you brainstorm? What's it look like?
The book Big Magic was pretty unrelatable to me, by the way. It was unrelatable. Okay. Like the way her relationship with creativity is very different. My relationship with my creativity is very different. There's none of the, yes, ideas do hit me. There is the mystical, there is the magical. I do have a relationship. There are ideas that come and go. And if I don't write them down, I forget. Like, it's completely, I agree with that. And I think that's because she's a writer. When it comes to video, it's way more than the idea. To make a video or to make a film, you need to have the idea, but then there is also the execution. Like, they're not just words. It's not just an idea. You have to find baby ducklings, like spend, I just cannot, like, today, like, I spent hours, I went to the new location, I talked to this art collector, like, convinced the people, give me the location, like, there are so many, the idea and, like, the creativity is, like,
one element
of it. I feel, like, my relationship with my creativity, the first, like, as I was listening to this, and as my brand grew in the past year, I never really saw myself as creative. Maybe that sounds weird, but I never really even thought of that. I never thought I was, or that I'm pursuing anything creative. But lately, people, like, I have been told so many, you're so creative, so creative. I was like, okay, I guess I'm creative. So I've always had ideas. Like, I've always, this is just natural. I mean, that's a bad answer.
But it's authentic. Like, if that's the truth, it's the truth. Yeah. I'm just
creative. This is, like, the word, you know, because it would be great if I could give you, like, a tip.
A formula. Something.
Yeah, a formula. This is so bad. So I just am great. I just wake up and, my friend, always Monica, my good designer friend, she's like, Ioana, how do you get all of these ideas? This is honestly, like, for me, all of the things that I've done so far are not, like, I haven't even tried enough. That's what I want to do so much more. Like, all of these things that I've done this year on my YouTube is, like, nothing. Like, I'm really changing my YouTube game. You'll see, like, this year.
Okay.
Really changing. Ugh, I can't. Okay. Oh my God. I'm so excited.
I'm excited.
Yes. Like, I'm going to change. I'm going to do so many other things. I really, like, because the idea is such a small process, this past year I was preoccupied with the 90% of the rest of the process. But this year I want to invest more. I want to dive deeper, like, connect more to all of these ideas that I have. So my creativity, my creative process, it always starts with a goal that I have for that video and with an intention. It never starts with an idea, because ideas, I have so many ideas that I could just, I have right. infinite ideas. I've never really felt that I ran out of ideas. The problem is the execution, because you can have a great idea for a video and it's like in your head is amazing, and then when you create it, it's shit. So it starts with an intention. For example, and my intention for this this YouTube is documenting the journey, because when I'm gonna, for example, let's say in 10, 20 years, I'm gonna create really big films. Let's say I'm gonna create the next Matrix, for example. And it would be so cool to do that and then have all of the process of how I became the person that was able to create that, because that is, like, worldwide mind-blowing to create something that amazing. And I think I can do it. So if I'm going to document this process, how empowering is that? How much you're adding to the world if you document your process? Like, I think that's really cool. And I really appreciate when people document their lives when they're trying to achieve, when they document their hero journey, because everybody's on their hero. You're on a hero journey. So that's my intention with this YouTube channel. So every time I'm document, I'm like, okay, what story am I telling here? What am I documenting now? So that is one intention. Then for every video, there is a different goal for every video, depending, like, what I'm trying to achieve with it. It's always like, and because the goals sometimes are contradictory and they don't fit each other, so I have to find creative solutions to how to work those goals into one. I can give you an example if you're curious.
100%.
I was working on this film this year and in January, and it was shot on 35. Okay, hold your horses. So, are you ready? It was shot on 35mm color film. This means nothing to you. Like,
I'm new to this space. Okay. That's like literal film, yeah?
Yeah, it's a short film. It's a short film.
Okay.
But the meaning of the 35mm color film is, so if you're a filmmaker, like, the cool filmmaker shoot on 8mm film, you know, like analog film, when you have the 8mm camera, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then, like, the professionals, they shoot on 16mm. When you have a bigger sensor and the image is, like, better. 16 is, like, for really pros. And then you have the 35mm, which is, like, official cinema. Like, Tarkovsky was shot on that. Like, all of the cinema is shot on 35mm film. You know, like, that's... And
you don't mess around with that.
That's some sacred shit right there. That is okay. So I shot. So the pressure. I was like, okay, we have 12 minutes of color film. What are we gonna do with it? The cinematographer, she came to me. She had, I have this. Let's make a film. So the goals for this film, like, there were contradictory goals. First, it needed to be a film that fit a narrative story. It needed to have some type of narrative story. It couldn't just be a beautiful visual piece. It couldn't be like music and then like some beautiful shots. That was not it. So it needed to have some type of story. Then it needed to be a fashion film. These two things are contradictory. Like, a fashion film doesn't have a story usually. A fashion film, the cliche fashion film, is like some metal-y sounding music with like girls licking something weird and like weird video transitions. Like that's a fashion. Or on the other side, you would have something really beautiful and like dreamy, the girl walking, like very blurry in slow motion, you know, fashion film. Has no message, nothing. Like, it's like, you don't get what is happening. Just some pretty shots with girls. So these two things, to have a narrative and make it a fashion film. And a fashion film is something where you show clothes. Like, I had to create an idea that shows, somehow I can justify showing and having the focus on clothes. And that was, oh my God, like, I had 3 days of hell. I was like, what am I gonna fucking do? It was so difficult. So that, these two. And then I had a specific, like, all of the locations. And then I couldn't, like, create anything. It also has to fit these locations that I have at my disposal. Like, I had a theater, I had a botanical, you know, like, I had all of these. So it's kind of like making a salad. These are the things. And let's create something with it. And you're like, oh my God, these two things, they do not work together. Water and oil, they do not mix. How do we do this? Usually, so filmmaking often for me is problem solving and, you know, finding clever solutions to this. You're going to be able to see this the result this year.
And do you like the problems? Like, is that one of the main bits that you like about it? The problem solving piece?
No.
No.
No, I mean, it's cool. I feel, you know, you're like, you get a dopamine. Ah, I figured that
after, but in it, it's brutal.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing I'm like learning. I'm like, there's just never, in regards to life or like your career, even like, I'm not a filmmaker, but it's like other things. I'm like, once I just achieve this problem, I'll be fine. And then like another problem comes up, and I'm like, no, this is, I'm just accepting it. And that's why I think I've had this awakening to storytelling also just with people in my life, and their passion for storytelling has had like spilled over into my life of like the hero's journey of like they overcome it. And so I try, it's easier said than done, but I try to be like, okay, this problem, I've overcome all these other problems before, these obstacles, like I'm gonna overcome this one. Don't get so down and out about it, because I just get so pissed off sometimes or so frustrated, so defeated. And I'm like, it's going to be fine, you know? Like, I get way too stressed about it that it ruins the fun in a lot of these processes for me. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's as Elizabeth Gilbert would say, is finding the thing that you're okay with the suffering, because everything would come with suffering. What is the thing that you would be okay with, the problems that thing comes with? And also, you're always going to have problems. You just are going to get, you can strive to get better problems.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I like that. Okay. We are nearing our marker. I think I just want to acknowledge that I really appreciate you sticking with me in this conversation. I think I was overwhelmed with ideas and thoughts that I wanted to ask you and directions I wanted to take the show, that at times I didn't give you a concise question or I didn't prompt you well, but you've really been a trooper, so thank you on that. And I want to say I cannot wait until you make the new version of The Matrix or whatever it's going to be. Like, I know you're going to do it, and I wholeheartedly know that you're going to do it, and I love that you're documenting the process, because even before you've made it, you're inspiring so many people, including myself. And so I can't wait to see what you make in the future, what you continue to make. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Emma. And we should start an alliance. The alliance for high school
film. Of what? Oh yeah, a fur coat. Okay. It's happening.
That's what we're gonna do. This was a pleasure. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I am so, it is so refreshing, your curiosity is refreshing, and I've seen it. It's not about me, it's about the world. You are curious. I meant the name of the podcast, everybody, but this is I love this.
Thank you. I think we both have that quality, and I think that's why I connected with you so much, is through your work I can see your your curiosity.
From life as a nun to cinematography, from time management to beauty, I honestly feel like Ioana and I covered a lot of ground in this episode. As always, I have immense gratitude to not only my guests, but also those of you that are following along, either listening or watching this episode. You've provided me with your two most valuable resources, your time and your attention. It's something that I do not take lightly, and I am always appreciative. I want to close out this episode by sharing a quote by Brianna Wyest. People want to hear stories that sound like their own. They want to read work that meets them precisely where they are. They want to collect and consume that which makes them feel understood. They want to see outside of them a little piece of what's within them. And the only way you can create that for other people is to pull out a sliver of your soul and put it on paper. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone you think will gain value from it as well. I always love to hear what you think of these episodes, as I put a lot of love, energy, and time into each video. So leave a comment and let me know what you think, or you can send me a DM over on Instagram at The Curious One Podcast. I look forward to connecting with you in the next one. Yeah.